Want to share a scary story with us? Jump on board as well. We've got open lines for you on Coast to Coast, and we'll be right into it when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We are back with you for open lines. And by the way, thank you to all of you who sent us emails, just loving our Veterans Day program last night. We truly appreciate it, and it is something that is very dear to all of us, and a tradition that we do every year with Danyon Brinkley, who has survived three episodes of near-death experiences. They keep sending the guy back, for crying out loud. But let's go to the phones to get this started. Mary's with us in Tampa, Florida. Hi, Mary. Welcome.
Hey, George. Good to talk with you.
You too. And your first time caller, so welcome aboard.
Thank you. Yeah, first time I've gotten in. I've been listening since before you were on, when I would listen to Art Bell.
That's a long time.
Yes, it's been a long time. So my experience was petrifying, and it was a long time ago. I was 16 years old. I was in New York, and I had a bedroom upstairs. You know, this was my parents. I was 16, but I was upstairs. I was the only bedroom upstairs. And so I went to bed one night. It was a hot summer night, and it was pitch black. And all of a sudden, I woke up to the sound of snoring.
Snoring.
And I could have had my bedroom windows open, but I didn't, because I was always nervous to have that open. So the bedroom windows were locked. My door to my bedroom was locked, and I hear snoring, and it's steady and rhythmic snoring. But of course, I'm petrified. So in the dark, I am trying to reach over, and I couldn't reach the nightstand to be able to turn the light on to see what was going on, because first I'm just thinking, whoever this is, I don't want to wake them up. You know, I'm petrified, but they're sleeping.
And does it sound like the snoring's coming from your bedroom?
Right in my bedroom.
Oh, yes, wow.
Exactly. I had a large bedroom, but it was coming right in the bedroom. And every time I would move a little bit toward to reach out to the nightstand to turn the light on, the bed would make a little noise, and I'd stop immediately. And then my heart is beating like crazy, and I try to reach out again, and the bed would squeak, and I'd stop, because I'd stop, and I'd listen, making sure the person is still snoring. So that went on for, I don't know, an hour and a half.
Oh, my God. You must have been petrified, Mary.
I was petrified. I mean, that's scary. That's nothing as scary as that has ever happened. So at any rate, when I finally, very slowly made it over, and it wasn't like the nightstand was far away, but I didn't want the bed to squeak. So when I finally was able to turn the light on, I looked around the bedroom, and I had, you know, one bed on one side of the room, another bed on the other side of the room where I could have a friend over, because it was a nice size room, and I didn't see anything. I didn't see anybody. I looked so very, very, then once again, extremely carefully, I tried to get up without making the bed squeak, but it would squeak, so I'd stop.
And the snoring continued, right?
The snoring continued. So finally, I got my feet on the floor, and I carefully stood up. And I looked by the foot of my bed. I looked around. I had a table in the middle of the floor with pillows tucked under it, like a little reading table. I looked all over, and I knew it couldn't be in the closet because I heard it right there in my room.
It was too crisp, yeah.
It was, yeah, exactly. So I looked all over the place. Finally, I'm trying to figure out what this is. And I looked at the fan I had turned on. It was one of those old fans that was like heavy, almost like iron, and it was on the floor, and it rotated back and forth and back.
That was making the sound?
And as I As I continued to hear the snoring, the fan, it was snoring to the movement of the fan. And I went, oh, my goodness.
I bet you were relieved, though.
Oh, I was. I was. But I was never so scared in my whole life.
That's a great story. And you remembered it since you were 16.
How could you forget that?
You could not. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing it with us, Mary. Next up, Tom in La Jolla, California is with us. Hey, Thomas.
Hi, George. Thank you for your service, Lieutenant.
Thank you, sir.
And, you know, open lines always reveals the magnificence of our audience. I mean, it's just amazing. Every man, every woman. I wanted to, since you interviewed Mark Sucre on Twilight Zone, I'm reminded of another director who, similar to Rod Serling, was Richard Donner. And he was able to bring a concept to the screen. And he did Superman with Christopher Reeves and Margot Kidder. He did Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson, Julia Roberts, brilliant movie. But my favorite time travel movie was Timeline, which he directed, based on the Michael Crichton novel of the same name. And it was just it was a very scary movie, too, about graduate students in the 20th century. They get transported back to the 14th century in France. And 14th century France is very scary. I mean, people die by the sword.
Oh, I bet.
Horribly. And in the movie, Richard Donner is able to bring together actors and actresses, and he's really an expert, George, at ensemble acting, in which the actors play off of each other. And you find Paul Walker, very young Paul Walker, before
his tragedy, right?
Yeah, before the tragedy, before Fast and Furious. Very young Gerard Butler, you know, before he became famous with like 300 and other movies, you know, Olympus Has Fallen. And it's just a terrific movie. It, as far as time travel, it explores Michael Crichton's views on quantum paradox, the idea that we may not be able to travel it back to the past, but that the past may be part of a multiverse. And Richard Donner juggled all of the elements in this movie. I think the highlight of the movie was the castle siege. I don't know how they did that, where you have a castle, the English troops are inside the castle, and the French troops are outside, and Donner built catapults, you know, slinging in.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a spectacular movie and spectacular acting that Donner was able to get out of all of the actors, and not just Walker and Gerard Butler, but every actor and actress he was able to get just really spectacular parts out of. But it was, to my mind, the very best time travel movie. And also a very scary movie, because 14th century France was not pretty. I mean, people died by the sword. And he really, several of the graduate students die in this film horribly. And it was a great movie. And I wanted to ask you what your favorite time travel movie was.
The Time Machine, classic, with Rod Taylor.
With Rod Taylor. Yes. Yeah, that was a fantastic.
The scene I'll always remember, Tom, was when he was sitting in the time machine and he was looking out the window and the seasons were changing.
Yes.
Instantly. The leaves would fall, they'd grow back, snow would come. It was just cool. I remember that when I was a kid.
Yeah, that was a terrific movie, and it was the way they did the time sequencing from past to future was just terrific. And H.G. Wells is a great writer.
Sure was. Absolutely. Yeah. All right,
and
thanks,
again,
Tom.
Thank you and your staff for Coast to Coast, and thank our audience, too.
They're the best, my friend. We have text and tweets as well. Tom, what do you have for us?
This one we have from Andy in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Which human emotion do you think is the most dangerous?
Anger, of course. I think when people are angry, they react and do things they normally would not. And there are some people who can get very, very angry. I think it's a dangerous emotion.
First one that popped in my mind was jealousy.
People
kill over jealousy.
Well, some people do, but if you're really angry, you kill too.
That's true. I watch a lot of movies. They kill.
It's right. Okay, you'll have another text for us after the half, huh?
Sure will.
Joe in Monterey, California. Hello, Joseph. Welcome to the program.
Well, I'll try not to be emotional.
That's right. Don't get angry.
Well, actually, anger sometimes gets people out of depression. It's a way of survival. So it depends upon what you're angry at and how you cope with it. Indifference would be pretty bad. You could watch someone die and not even react.
That's true.
Now, there's something that your guests talked about the UFOs with flashing lights. And I've seen this happen so many years listening to Coast to Coast, and they talk about flashing lights. And people don't understand that maybe the flashing lights can be a means of communication from ship to ship. It's like a computer communication and giving the status of the ship. If anything happens, they know what's going on from ship to ship. Also, it can be like a method of like a black box. If a ship goes down, they'll know where to find it. But I feel that some of these blinking lights are to get your attention so they could read your mind, George. Because when you focus on them, they can pick up your thoughts, and they will know who can see them and who cannot.
That's an interesting take. Joe, how did you get involved in these kind of subjects?
It's always gradually with everyone. That's their story. It's always gradually that the one experience leads to another. But I was abducted when I was a child, 2 years old, and I couldn't remember. It came to me in dreams when I was a little bit older.
Did you tell your parents? Did you tell your parents? And what did they say?
How could you tell your parents you're a child? And it was always in a dream. Now, I used to sleepwalk when I was a child, so that was kind of freaky, too.
I find sleepwalking to be fascinating because you literally sleepwalk with your eyes open, don't you?
I don't know. I don't remember. I was sleeping.
But, I mean, you don't run into things. You don't fall down the stairs. You're very aware of where you're going, aren't you?
Well, it could also be if the person is sleeping, they may be in an alpha state, in an astral state. So they would know where everything is because of a psychic ability.
That could be too, but sleepwalking is a fascinating situation. I think the brain takes over, and your eyes are open, your vision is there. I think you can see what you're doing, but your memory's gone.
Maybe it's a form of control other than ourselves, or maybe it's our higher self trying to find out information or go somewhere.
Do you still sleepwalk? I mean, does anybody tell you do that?
No, I don't believe I sleepwalk anymore. I don't know if it was a long duration of time. I never did the actual study on the statistics of sleepwalking. It may be fascinating to find out if there's anyone out there that knows what's going on.
That could be. All right, Joe, thanks. It's always good talking to you. Mike in Denver, Colorado's with us next. Hello, Millennial. Welcome to the show.
George, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. How are you?
Okay, I'm glad it was you because we have another Mike from Denver, and he's not a millennial at all.
Right. Well, first of all, George, I want to say thank you so much for the veterans show you did yesterday. It was absolutely outstanding to honor our veterans. Thank you so much for your service.
Thank you.
And, you know, I had tonight for Open Lines, I wanted to talk about an amazing veteran whose story I read about earlier this week. His name is Max Cleland. He was a former Vietnam vet. He lost both of his legs and his arm after a hand grenade went off in Vietnam.
Oh, God.
And he was close to death But, you know, he went to Walter Reed, he recovered, and he actually returned home from Vietnam. He became the youngest member of the Georgia Senate in 1970. And then after that, Jimmy Carter actually appointed him head of the VA. At 35, he was the youngest person to hold that job, and actually the first Vietnam vet to do so. And when he was head of the VA, he actually helped develop a lot of policy regarding helping vets that had PTSD and depression. And he actually just passed away earlier this week at 79 years old. But, you know, George, to see the resiliency and just the adversity that this man overcame, it gives me hope to reach that age of, you know, 79, because it's pretty daunting when you're 25. You don't think you're ever going to make it to 80.
It goes, Mike, let me tell you, it goes fast, because when I was your age, I thought the getting to where I am now was at the end of the light. I'd never get there. It would be, it seems so far away. It comes up like that so fast.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you so much again, George, for the show yesterday. And I just wanted to share that tonight. So thank you.
Okay. All right, my friend. And Mike the Millennial, he visited Tom and I at one of our Beyond Belief tapings. He brought his mother because he lives out in that area, and that's where we videotape. And what a delightful guy. And, you know, when you look at youth in this country and you look at people like Mike, you're very, very hopeful for the future of this planet. You really are, because it's one of a kind. Louise in Kentucky. Hello there, Cleopatra.
George, thank you for accepting my call. George, I want to talk about the star children, because I realize now that I'm one of them.
I bet you are, because you seem enlightened about so many things.
It is a wonderful experience. And last week, I woke up and there was a star over my bed shining on me. And I looked up because it was so bright, and I looked up and then I realized I'm a star child. So today when I was listening to the videos, Ancient Aliens, they were talking about the star children.
Yep.
These are children, some of us were born here on Earth, some were brought here, but we are highly intelligent, very talented, and we can do things that other people are not able to do. And it makes people, many people are leery of us. They are uncomfortable being around us. But I didn't know what it was. I just knew whatever I wanted to do, I could do. When I thought about my life, Miss Kentucky, cheerleader, debutante, sorority person, voted best dress, best personality, been all over the world, Egypt, Stonehenge, Mexico, Teotihuacan, Japan, and all. I just want to thank you, George, for the teachings that you have given me, because it makes me realize who I am and what I've done and the mission I have in this world. I just want to thank you for everything.
Well, you're very welcome, Louise, and you keep doing the great things that you keep doing. And I got to tell you, our guests are the best, and we all learn something from them. Open lines continue when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. If you're planning Thanksgiving dinner, you might want to get your turkey early, because I'm told there could be a turkey shortage, so be careful. Let's go back to the calls. Let's go to Chad in Shawneetown, Illinois. Welcome to the program. Hi, Chad.
Hey, great to talk to you, George.
Thank you, sir.
You want to know about scariest experiences? Mine happened November 1st, 1996, between 1 and 1:30 a.m., and I'm a lifelong experiencer, but I saw a gray next to my bed.
Oh, my gosh. Tell us what happened.
I woke up. And I was having to sleep with my grandma that night. I was raised by my grandparents. This happened in Rosie Claire, Illinois. I woke up and looked over, and I saw the typical gray.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, no. You know, they finally came for me, because I've been researching this stuff for years, even at a young age. And kind of rolled over and then peeked back over, and it was still there. Rolled back over again. Peeked back over actually a couple times, and then one time it was gone out of nowhere. And real quick, I do want to mention this was featured on one of Brett Oldham's YouTube videos.
Oh, really? That's cool. He's a good guy.
Yeah, me and him keep in regular contact, actually, because he's from only a couple hours north of me, and I read one of his books, Children of the Grays, and it's like a mirror image of my life, except for he knows more about his experiences than I do. He's seen them more.
It's about time we get him back on the program. Next time you talk to him, tell him hi for me.
Oh, will do. I talk to him all the time, actually. But, I mean, I'm the typical experiencer, nosebleeds out of nowhere. I'm still scared to death of them, can't hardly sleep at night. The whole shebang, it's just that's the only time I've ever seen one. And I was almost killed one time in a car wreck, but that was nothing compared to me actually seeing one of these things.
Do you remember the car wreck, Chad?
Yeah, I was 18. Me and my best friend rolled a Ford Explorer three times, and I got shot out of the sunroof.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but I could accept then that I was going to die almost, but I could not accept what I was seeing that night.
Oh, my God. Take care of yourself. And, yeah, get a hold of Brad for us. I've been in one big accident in my life, and I was about your age, too. I was about 18 years old, and I was in Detroit. I was on the freeway. It was a little slippery, and I was one of the roads was kind of hilly, and I went up. And then I came down, and as I was coming down, all the cars were stopped in front of me. And I must have had maybe like 75 feet. And I hit the brakes, and I just hydroplaned and smashed right into a car from the back. The car that my dad had let me use was a Ford Mercury. Those cars in those days were bulky. I mean, the chrome on the bumpers, they weren't plastic. They were chrome. And it was just an amazing thing. But I remember bouncing off the steering wheel. We didn't have any seat belts in those days. And my nervous system was screwed up for 2 months. It was just horrible. But I didn't break any bones or anything like that. But that, I bet a lot of people have been in accidents, to be sure. Cornelius is with us in Louisiana. Hello. Ever been in a car accident, Cornelius?
And, George, I was in a pretty bad one on I-20 one time. We almost hit a gas well, so it was almost the end of
your car, you would have blown up.
Yeah, we would have blown up. And some guys with big rebel flags stopped by and was going to pick us up. And I said, no, we don't need to get with an old trucker that was driving down the road. We got a hitch a ride and went to a place called Stuckey's. I don't know if they still have those Stuckey's out on the highways and stuff and byways. But that trucker, man, he was something else. But, George, I wanted to make a coast-to-coast connection. I was trying to call on the old landline, and I'm talking to Tommy and then Jeremiah, and the thing kept cutting off. So I'm on the cell phone. I got to get outside on it so you can hear me. But I made a coast-to-coast connection. I got my old flame from Louisiana Tech when I was 79, when I started at Louisiana Tech, we met. So old Rosie was my girlfriend and stuff. And
How long has it been since you made that connection?
40 years.
Wow.
And what had happened was, George, because of what Mike and his mom did and you and Tommy doing, trying to raise that money, she saw that and stuff, and said, well, I can call him on a landline and stuff. And she found out my dad had passed and my mom had passed, but her mom's still alive and stuff. So I just want to thank Coast to Coast and stuff, because like I said, you're my family now that dad's gone and stuff, and it'll be my first Thanksgiving without my dad. So I'm going to be spending it
well, you
with
spend,
all of y'all.
Spend it with us, my friend. And how's the blood sugar?
Well, I'm going to tell you some good news on that too, George. But what I want to say first is this. Rosie was horny for old Corny. So that's my Corny joke for the night.
That's as far as I'll let you talk about that, right?
Yeah, I know. Yes. And Barry has Corny be good. So, but anyway, I went to the doc on Tuesday. He said my cholesterol was a little high, but just watch it. But he said my blood sugar was real good. From that thousands, it's down to like 100.
So that's amazing. That's better than good.
Yeah, well, I eat right now, George. Like I said, I was eating after my dad died. I don't cook or anything, so I go to these hamburger joints and stuff and get sweet tea and sweet lemonade. I wasn't drinking no water. I've drank plenty of water now. But Meals on Wheels, they cook the meals and they freeze them. So I got 7 meals, so I eat once a day. So carrots and peas, greens, they have all kind of vegetables and stuff on there with a little bit of meat. So I'm making it, George. And God bless all the people on Coast to Coast AM because they're keeping me going, George. But I don't know. Somebody got to my landline. 5 times I called Tommy.
Jeez.
Kept going dead.
All right, yeah, get that checked out. Call the phone company, and they'll get some service people out there. Let's go to Orange, California. Ruben's with us on Coast to Coast. Hello, Ruben.
Good evening, George.
Hi there.
Talking with you.
You too.
Been listening to you since you began on Coast to Coast.
Thank you.
Okay, my story is that I was in 210th Freeway, and this is back in 1983.
Okay.
And then at the time, you know, the houses were not yet developed, so there was a lot of what I call private roads. So I decided, I was young, I decided, well, you know what, I'm going to get off the freeway, I'm getting bored. So I decided to go on this gated kind of fencing thing, and I noticed it was open, so I got in it. And I started going up the mountains, and I started rolling. And the car, you know, there's 45 degrees turns. And so all of a sudden I go, I'm getting bored, I got to get out of here. So I started going down, and I started speeding.
And
I started speeding down the hill on a 45-degree angle. My car went off the cliff.
Oh.
It almost went like when you're going on a ride, on a, you know. And all of a sudden, I noticed I was flying. I go, what am I flying? I go, yeah. And all of a sudden,
God, Ruben. How far was the plunge?
I think it was about 40 feet down.
That's pretty good. That's a lot.
Yeah. So it tumbled. The car started hitting the tunnel on top of the, and it started hitting everything. I finally ended up between two trees. But then, you know, I was in the back of the sea. I was everywhere. By the time I ended up, I just sat there for a couple of seconds or minutes. Now it seemed like a long time. I didn't know if I was dead or alive. And all of a sudden, I noticed that the sea was all completely bended, the sea that I was driving.
Mm-hmm.
And the column of the steering wheel was bended also.
Jeez.
I said, what the hell happened here?
You're lucky.
By my language.
God, you're lucky.
And then after that, I got out of the car and I started walking because there was nobody. It was a private road. There was nobody going to come and get me out of it.
I was going to say, how'd you get out of the thing?
I started walking, George, and then as I was walking, it was like tonight. It was a hot night with a full moon. And as I was walking back in the same road, I started hearing a howling, but not just one. There were like maybe 10. They were like coyotes. And I was like, oh, shoot, what am I going to do? So I climbed a street and went to sleep. The following day, I walked out of there, and I collapsed. And they took me to the hospital. Yeah, I had a collapsed lung.
Oh, my God.
For a couple of days. Yeah. And they pretty much put me together. That was scary because I didn't know if I was going to make it through the night, really. Even then, when I was on the tree trying to, you know, I still was wondering if I was physically a human being because there was nothing to let me know if I was okay.
The fact that you were even able to walk away from it is amazing.
Yeah, that was the amazing part, you know. I have other stories, but I want to talk. Can I talk about another subject with you, if I may?
Real quick.
Okay, it's about the extras that come to you and talk about the ETs and everything about them.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, the ETs have been around since the cavemen, right?
Sure.
And they've been even modern times with the Bible. But they're missing a point. I hear every time, and they're not even touching the topic on it, any of them. And my concern is that they're not saying that the ETs have put their sense in our DNA. And that's why they're here, because we are practically their children.
Well, you know, we've talked about the hybridization program, and you may be very right. We could be their offspring. Zachariah Sitchin has believed that we were seeded by extraterrestrials called the Anunnaki, and they genetically altered the species that were on the planet at the time, whatever they might have been, cave people, maybe even apes, and that they seeded them, and then boom, here we are. So that's very possible. Text and tweets this half, Tom. What do you have for
us? Hey, George, well, first of all, on behalf of millions of people, thank you for stopping Corny Too Much Information. So thank you for
yes,
stopping him on
exactly.
that.
Exactly. That's one of those red flags.
I want to ask you real quick, when you were going down that hill, I never knew that story. Do you remember what you were, like your words, what you were thinking when you were going down there?
I cannot tell you the words.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, I'll bet you can't
but,
repeat them.
You know, when I went up the hill and slammed on the brakes and had like 50 to 75 feet, I said to myself, this is it.
Oh, man.
You know, and then I went smack right into that car. Ugh. And fortunately, they were okay. And I bounced off the steering wheel. I mean, I walked out of it. I was okay. The car was demolished.
You're lucky. You could have got messed up.
But I got sick later on. My nervous system collapsed on me. And I couldn't eat right. I got sick to my stomach all the time for 2 months. It was unbelievable.
What did your dad say about the car?
Yeah, he was more concerned about me.
Of course.
He went out and bought me a brand new Mustang after that.
Very nice. Very nice.
Well, he was a great guy.
Hey, this one from Carolyn in Santa Monica, California. What's the difference between a poltergeist and a ghost, and have you ever seen one?
A poltergeist is more of an upset ghost. It is something that is a little more violent for whatever reason. And no, I have not seen any of those, nor have I seen a ghost. The only thing I've seen strange, years ago, remember I talked about it on the show, those armadillo-type things that went across a road in front of me?
Weird, yeah.
It's like shadow. They were shadow things.
Yeah.
Heidi Hollis would love that.
But like the poltergeist, if you hear something in your house, that's the poltergeist, right? Aren't they responsible for
well,
the physical?
It depends on what you hear. You mean like, you know, a door cracking open or something like that?
Well, the way I understand it, a ghost doesn't make those kind of sounds. If you hear something, it's a poltergeist.
Well, generally you're right about that. Poltergeists are more into dropping things, making noises, harassment, that kind of thing.
Scary stuff, huh?
It really is. We've still got time for another quick call before the break. Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Wayne.
Good evening, George. Thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Boy, your phone's really muddy.
Oh, it is.
Well, there you go. There you go.
That
much
better?
Yes, much better.
Okay. Wanted to talk a little bit about the less than 2 out of 1 million children in America that have been affected by the virus. Those are the statistics. Actually, as of March of this year, 675 had the virus.
Yep.
So why are they going to inoculate 22 million school children out of the 72 million children of the age from young to 18? It's just crazy to me.
I think it's a money grab myself. This is just, you know, the pharmaceutical companies have made a fortune last year on the vaccines. I mean, Pfizer into the billions of dollars. They're all making a lot of money. I think it's a money grab. You know, I was into a discussion with a friend of mine who's been vaccinated. I am not. I think everybody should have the right to decide what they want to do. I'm not opposed to vaccines, but I think I'm opposed to mandates, and I just want everybody to understand that. But he was all upset that I wasn't vaccinated and that I was sitting next to him. And I said, first of all, you're vaccinated. What do you care if I'm not? You're supposed to be protected. And he couldn't give me an answer. He just could not give me the right answer. But, you know, you follow your own heart and your own brain, and you do what you got to do for yourself and your family and do the research. I think it's a genetic vaccine that came out way too fast. And I'm interested in this pill that Merck has because, you know, that might show some promise as well. But I'm concerned about some of the blood clotting and inflammation that the Moderna one apparently is creating. And it's just a situation that I wish would go away. But I think the flu has gone away. Has anybody reported on people getting the flu over the last couple of years? Up to 60,000 people die a year from the flu, and I haven't heard one story about that. Anyways, more open lines when we come right back.